This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. We'll have some insight on the Cubs hiring David Ross as their new manager. What might that mean for the team? And Personal Finance Wednesday, is this an opportunity for you to tell your kids about money, especially if they are CPS students who are home, ride-sharing company, space-sharing company, WeWork, dire financial straits before a bailout deal. That'll be in our next segment. Right now, though, Mayor Lightfoot has presented her first proposed budget today. Let's talk about it with Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Greg, so what are you making of what the mayor's saying?
Well, what I make is it could have been a lot worse than it is. In fact, it's actually pretty decent with making a couple of assumptions. Most people had thought there was going to be a very large property tax increase in this budget. There is not. There's a small $18 million increase. That's not for the city, but for the separate library fund, so that libraries can open up on Sundays. She put together the rest with a little bit of here, a little bit there, and two kind of big surprises that we hadn't anticipated. One is $200 million in savings from refinancing existing city debt. They're going to book all that up front, which is a little bit unorthodox, but that certainly helps. And $163 million from a deal with the state of Illinois to get more reimbursement for emergency ambulance service. You put those together, and that's almost half of the record $838 million hole she faced.
And going forward, you know, obviously we're talking about this budget. Next time there's going to be another budget with more problems. But at least initially in the here and now, it seems like this is workable.
Well, it is, but there's an asterisk. And the asterisk is she's counting on Springfield to do some things to help her out. For this budget year, for 2020, she's counting on approval of a restructured real estate transfer tax. It's a tax you pay when you sell your house or your business, if it's a building. She's counting on $50 million in 2020 and $100 million thereafter. And she wants that approved right away, which is a real hard push. The legislature's in for 3 days next week and then 3 days in November for their veto session. I don't know if that's going to happen. And then she's counting on the legislature a little bit later to restructure the taxes around the Chicago casino. That is a lot more money. It's hundreds of millions of dollars a year that would go towards pensions. And she came right out in her speech and said, well, if we don't get the help we're looking for from Springfield, we may have to make some real tough decisions about other revenues. In other words, I'm going back to property tax.
Now, she's also talked about some significant budget cuts. Is that doable? I mean, when you're talking about several hundred million dollars.
Well, we won't know until we look at the small print. She says there's no layoffs at all, which is a little bit of a surprising, but she also claims she's going to raise $150 million by zero-based budgeting, which is a technique a lot of businesses use, but it's not very common in business. We're going to have to actually go through it line by line and department by department to see how many of those cuts are real or how many are not. But, you know, on its surface, it's certainly a step in the right direction.
Now, does this in any way impact or change the dynamic on what's going on with the teachers on strike?
Probably not. It suggests that she declared a big TIF surplus in her budget, which would provide about $100 million potentially for Chicago Public Schools, maybe a little less than that. But I think they've already budgeted that, Cisco. If she's got her budget, her own budget in order, and she's not going to have to fight back brush wars here, that gives her a little more muscle to try to stare down the union at public schools.
Yeah, sure.
So this should help her a little bit.
Yeah, really. Yeah, always. Yeah, really fascinating. Thank you for all the details and insight, Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Coming up, we're learning more about the rescue of the company WeWork. It is fascinating. That's coming up. More details are emerging about the bailout of the space-sharing company WeWork. Let's talk with Ellen Hewitt, reporter covering startups for Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Ellen, before we get into this bailout and maybe what might happen going forward, for people who are not familiar with WeWork, just kind of give us a few details of what WeWork does.
Yeah, WeWork is one of the most valuable companies to come out of Silicon Valley or the larger startup world in the last few years. And its main business is renting office space. So they take on leases of commercial office space for offices for 10 to 15 years and then parcel it up into smaller pieces and then rent those out on shorter term leases to businesses who maybe want more flexible access instead of the regular long term leases. But they've become this super valuable company, and they were planning to go public this year. And then in the last couple of months, that entire plan has fallen apart.
Yeah, talk about that. Again, we'll get into the bailout here in just a moment, but talk about that. I think that was a fascinating story where WeWork had this really huge valuation, and it seemed like every time someone talked, that valuation was going down.
Yeah, it was interesting. So at its most recent private funding round, that was in January, so less than a year ago, the company was valued at $47 billion. That was the price at which they had taken a small additional piece of funding. And so that was kind of this top line valuation that people kept in mind when they talked about WeWork. And of course, as a company gets close to going public, then the valuation of the company becomes an important thing that people discuss, because that is part of, how people are going to price this IPO. So then as the banks started going through the details, trying to decide at what price they would get ready to sell WeWork stock on the public market, it became clear that public investors were not ready to buy this company at a $47 billion price tag. In fact, discussions about it in the lead up to this now aborted IPO, tossed around the price of maybe like $20 billion or 15 or even 10. And as we'll see, that has borne out in this new deal of the valuation being much lower than the company thought it was 9 or 10 months ago.
And SoftBank stepped in. That's the latest news. SoftBank stepped in, and it sounds like literally a bailout, like they might have been gone otherwise.
Yeah. So as we'd reported, WeWork is a company that has long been prioritizing growth over profitability. The company has grown extremely quickly. They have offices all over the world. That being said, they spent a lot of money to get there, and the company was prepared to basically run out of money as soon as next month. They had anticipated getting an infusion of cash, both in the form of, new equity purchases as well as debt, had they gone through with this plan for the IPO. Once the IPO was not happening, which was withdrawn last month, then they were scrambling for cash. They were looking for ways to cut expenses at the company, but they really needed billions of dollars to keep going. And so that's where SoftBank came in. As you mentioned yesterday, late last night, final official announcement of this bailout deal from SoftBank in the tune of, I think, somewhere close to $9 billion in various financial forms. And keep in mind, SoftBank has already invested more than $10 billion in this company over the years. They made their first investment in 2017 and have been the company's biggest investor. Now that things were going south, the SoftBank has basically purchased most of WeWork. They own about 80% of the company now.
Let's talk about what would happen if SoftBank had not stepped in and WeWork had somehow gone under. Quite a disruption.
Yeah, quite a disruption. They had a secondary sort of backup financial plan in the works that was a debt package led by JP Morgan. That probably would have helped them keep going, but the debt terms were fairly onerous and it would be unclear sort of how the company might go forward. They would have probably had to make a lot of cuts. And to be honest, they still will. They are still expecting to cut maybe thousands of jobs in the next few weeks is what they expect. And the company is certainly going to be going through tough times in the near future. They need to make a lot of changes about how the company is run. This is a company that has never turned a profit and in fact lost, had losses of around $900 million, I think, in the first half of this year. And they now need to get profitable. They need to cut expenses. That will probably come in the form of cutting off and selling side businesses that have less of a connection to office space, and then also cutting staff, as we've mentioned, and making other changes. And they've also faced an executive exodus. They have, chief product officer, chief creative officer, their top spokesman, all these people have left in the last few weeks. the company is definitely in turmoil.
Yeah, it seems like there's much less of a taste for companies losing money on Wall Street, that's for sure. Thanks so much for all the details. Good information. Ellen Hewitt, a reporter covering startups for Bloomberg.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Mecum Auctions is staging Mecum Chicago at the Schaumburg Convention Center. It starts tomorrow. Let's find out more about this huge auto auction. It draws sellers and bidders from dozens of states. We welcome Frank Mecum, Director of Consignments at Mecum Auctions here in Chicago. Frank, welcome to the show. Are we talking about sort of everyday cars that people are coming for? Are they antique cars? Is it a whole variety of things? What are you selling?
We have a little bit for everybody. We have antique cars. We're going to have cars that you're going to see for $5,000, and you're going to see cars well into the six figures.
So where did this all get started here? Because I think a lot of people have heard of the auction. They're just not quite understanding. This is a local mom-and-pop thing.
My father started the company in 1988. Our family's been in the car business for over 60 years, and he was always involved in collector cars, Corvettes, and he had the idea of trying an auction. And one auction turned into two, and two turned into 10, and we're at where we are now.
Yeah, now why 32
years later.
Yeah, why the popularity? Why would people rather come to an auction like this as opposed to just going to a traditional dealer?
Well, you're at a traditional dealer. You're not seeing many collector cars at a traditional dealer. These are specialty cars and collectibles, and we've seen a movement over the last 10 years, and not only in our hobby, all hobbies, that auctions have really become vogue and popular.
So these are people that are really car lovers who come here.
You got people that are collectors that have more than one car. You have families that are coming to get one collector car to go to the local car show on Friday night or the local drive-in on Friday night to show off what they have and to have fun.
So for people thinking about coming out to Schaumburg to see you, is this sort of a traditional live auction where there's someone actually calling and people are raising hands or bid cards or something? How does it work?
This is exactly what you picture when you think of the word auction. It's a traditional auction with an auctioneer calling bids with a audience bidding on the cars. We will sell over 1,000 cars this week, and one will trade hands every 2 minutes.
Good. It sounds like great fun, really. I appreciate you being with us for just a few minutes here. That is Frank Mecum, Director of Consignments at Mecum Auctions in Chicago. Their big auction, more than 1,000 cars, kicks off starting tomorrow in Schaumburg at the Schaumburg Convention Center.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. When students are out of school, it may be a great time to teach them about money. We'll get some help doing that during Personal Finance Wednesday. The Cubs call on a member of the World Series family to be their next manager. Thousands of striking teachers pack the streets around Chicago City Hall as Mayor Lightfoot delivers her first budget address. President Trump says a ceasefire in Syria will be permanent, and the U.S. is lifting economic sanctions on Turkey. On Wall Street, the Dow up 16, NASDAQ is up 5, S&P is up 2 points. Oil today is the big winner. It's up right about 2.5%. Beautiful sunshine in Chicago all day long, heading to a high right about 58 degrees. Right now, it's 49 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Multiple reports have been saying throughout the day that the Cubs have chosen David Ross, their former catcher, as the team's new manager. WBBM's Rick Gregg has been following this throughout the morning. He joins us live now here at the Business Hour desk. Rick, what do you make of this as you've been seeing all this activity?
Well, this was the expected result here, Cisco. David Ross has been a favorite of the franchise for a long time, not only because he won the World Series, but then they brought him right into the fold as a part-time front office guy for a while. And then when they did not extend Joe Maddon's contract, speculation began, seems like a year ago, that David Ross would be the next manager. The Cubs did go through due diligence, but that's where they ended up.
Yeah, it is interesting because it does seem from the beginning that everyone was sort of expecting that David Ross had at least the inside track.
Well, what Ross brings is a familiarity not only with the players in the clubhouse, but with the front office. The last couple of years, he's been working and getting that kind of experience, figuring out exactly what Jed Hoyer, Theo Epstein, the Ricketts family, what they want out of the product on the field. The hope is that he can be the bridge between the front office that Joe Maddon, not that he was bad at that, but that Joe Maddon wasn't quite as good as the front office would like him to be at.
Ultimately, the Cubs, yeah, you know, they're one of our teams here in town. Lots of people love them, big fans, but ultimately they are a business, and the Ricketts family has done a really excellent job at, I think, harnessing a lot of the economic potential there, not only at the ballpark, but in Wrigleyville in general and with the team. They have to be thinking about the fans and sending some kind of a message to them in this decision.
Well, think about when they hired Joe Maddon. They were bringing in a new identity. Of course, they had to build a new identity from the Lovable Losers, but also Madden's identity himself, the hair, the glasses, the stories about Cousin Eddie, the Winnebago, all of that. David Ross doesn't have that, at least not that we know of. He has certainly a world championship pedigree, but not that kind of he's not the character, at least not the same way that Maddon is. Does that mean he won't end up with a restaurant someday and that the Cubs won't be able to capitalize? I don't know. Theo Epstein said something very interesting a couple of weeks ago when they announced that Maddon was leaving. He said that Maddon was the absolute right person for that time to get them to the World Series. He was looking for today's version, today's Joe Maddon for these Cubs. And the Cubs think it's David Ross who brings both the past, in the recent past, and at least the present and hopefully the future. At least they hope so.
What remains to be seen is, what is this time? Is it winning another World Series? Is it kind of babysitting a little while?
They insist they're going to challenge every year. This is not throwing up their hands. They're going to challenge for a championship every year, but they are going to look to the future. We've seen some other changes as well in the front office and the coaching staff. More to come. Not major changes yet. Not from outside of the organization. Right now, they're staying tight. We'll see how that changes, because it will.
Yeah, fascinating. Big news in Chicago today. Lots going on, including the Cubs. They're not official yet, but lots of reports saying David Ross is the team's new manager. Rick will have more coming up in sports in the 1 o'clock hour. Of course, the markets have been moving today. Not much right now, though. Kind of, I guess, a little bit of a roller coaster. Let's find out what's going on. Paul Nolte is joining us, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Paul, right now, all the major indexes basically at the flat line. What are you seeing?
A lot of nothing going on, and it's been that way really now for the last 2 weeks as we get into the meat of earnings season. This week and next is where most of the companies in the S&P 500 will be reporting earnings, and what we're going to be trying to tease out of it, and this is where we started to see some of the numbers coming out the last couple of days, is impact of Brexit, impact of China trade, impact of slowing U.S. economy, and how does it impact each of those companies, as well as some of the idiosyncratic or company-specific news.
Well, let's talk about some of the company-specific news. The Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's talk about Caterpillar. Big disappointing.
It was, and it was across the board, and certainly they are the poster child for China. As China goes, I think you can overlay the growth in China and the Chinese economy and the stock price for Caterpillar. So as China has been slowing, the orders are not coming in. They're not doing nearly as much business. So they missed on the top line. They missed on the bottom line. Interestingly, the stock is actually still up, and I think that may be on the hopes that we do get to part two of a trade deal after we hopefully get part one done sometime next month. So there is some hope, at least in the market, that this may be the bottom for Caterpillar, and part of the reason why it's trading a little bit higher today, even after bad numbers.
Yeah, if the tariffs are gone, is that maybe make things immediately better for Caterpillar, or is it just the Chinese economy not expanding like it was that it's the big deal?
Yeah, the big deal really is the Chinese economy is not expanding like it was. And certainly if the trade tariffs get behind us, they may be able to restart that engine. Is it going to be like a light switch? No, it's going to take a few quarters to see that. But certainly Wall Street will be anticipating that and start to bid up a lot of those companies that are involved in China.
Thoughts on Boeing? It's been interesting to me, even with all of its challenges, Boeing is such a behemoth that the stock hasn't really seemed to suffer as much as people might have thought it would.
No, and that's the interesting thing is you only got a couple companies you're buying airplanes from. So whether you're going to be buying Airbus or Boeing, they're pretty much the only games in town. So Boeing is saying that they're going to be able to get the MAX 737 up and going pretty quickly and get approval. And that, I think, is heartening investors who have kind of suffered a little along the way. It's been very volatile over the last couple months, depending on the news items that come out about the impact of MAX 737, when that's going to be flying again.
Yeah, it's been just amazing to follow that. Thank you. Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour, when students are out of school like they are currently in Chicago because of the teacher's strike. It does not mean they can't be learning, and one great subject is how to handle money. Let's get some advice from Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. All right, Craig, so you have parents out there with kids of varying ages. Give them some tips here. What can they do in the few days, hopefully few days, that the kids are out of school to help them understand money?
Well, let's hope it's only a few days, because I don't know about you. My life is easier when my kids are in school during the day.
Oh, yeah. But a lot of parents are totally agreeing with you right now.
We're all pulling together. So, Cisco, I think about when the kids are young. And when I say young, I mean as kindergarten, preschool. And you really can't teach them about money, but what you can do is have something visual. You can create something fun. So when our kids were little, we literally had a translucent container on the kitchen island where every day we would take our change and just let the kids pour it into the jar. And what was fun is we said, hey, kids, when this jar gets full, we're going to go to the bank, turn it in, and then we're going to do something special with it. And it's funny how they just got excited. It didn't matter if it was pennies or quarters. They just wanted to see it grow.
How important is that in a credit and debit card age? How important is that?
Oh, I think it's critical, because that's a great segue into the next level, which is I always remind people that when the kids are in elementary school and middle school, those little kids are learning. They are seeing all of our habits, and because everything is with a swipe of the credit card, everything is scanning the app on our phone, I think our children must think we have money trees. So the way we change that script is that's when we start introducing the concept of an allowance or a commission. But I'm very careful, at least what we did with our boys, is we just didn't just give them an allowance for breathing. We tied the allowance to chores, because our message was, hey, boys, money is something that's earned. It's not something that's given.
Now, I had a job beginning with a paper route at age 9. I think a lot of people say, what is a paper route? I have no idea what that even is anymore. But from that point forward, I was working in some sort of a job. You don't necessarily want your 9-year-old to get a job, but maybe when they get in the teen years, is that time to say you have to do something?
I think when they get in the teen years, we're absolutely going to encourage work, and we're going to remind them, Cisco, that I'm sure your paper route was uphill both ways when it was raining razor blades, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and constantly snowing even in July.
Oh, yes, absolutely, not to be forgotten. But to your point, when they're teenagers now, we need to give them the responsibility of a bank account, because what else are they going to do with the paycheck? So for our boys, whether it was their job, whether it was money they received for a holiday, a birthday, whatever it was, we never made the deposits for them. We required them to use technology, their smartphone, to make those deposits, track their savings, and then when they're teenagers in high school, that's the first time you start introducing the concept of saving and investing.
Good ideas. Thank you so much. Always appreciate you being on the show. That's Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. That's Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, the latest forecast on the price of oil, as it is flying high today.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And let's talk about oil now, as investment bank Goldman Sachs sees little change in oil prices next year. Phil Flynn is joining us, senior market analyst at Price Group, also a Fox Business News contributor. Phil, kind of let us in on what Goldman Sachs is saying.
Basically, they're saying it's going to be the equivalent of oil price Groundhog's Day, that every day is going to be like the same, right? And every time we get a bullish story, it's going to be offset with a bearish story. For example, everybody's concerned about rising tensions in the Middle East, the potential of a disruption of supply, but that's going to be offset, you know, by rising production and slowing demand in other parts of the world. And this a talk that oil is going to be stuck in a trading range for the entire year is really based on a presumption that the economy is going to really slow. And a lot of people are thinking that, Cisco, but I'll tell you what, if I look at the actual oil data, it's telling a different story, and I'm concerned that this complacency that you're getting out of Goldman Sachs is dangerous, because if you expect the market to go nowhere, that's when it's going to surprise you.
And it could surprise you either way, right? When you're talking about a commodity like oil, literally, one thing could happen on one day that could send it in a crazy direction.
You're absolutely correct. And we've seen a lot of crazy directions the last couple of days. Tweets, you know, headlines out of the Middle East. You know, in September, we saw prices get up to $65 a barrel after the attack on the Saudi oil fields and oil processing plant. You know, when the Saudis brought production back online, the market crashed. But you know, that's scary because it gave the market a false sense of security that, hey, this market can bounce back from almost anything. And I don't think that's the case. You know, for example, we got a report today from the Department of Energy. You know, you hear about all this slowing demand. You would assume that our oil supplies would be well above average for this time of year. Well, actually, they're not. You know, oil supplies are just barely at the average range. And if you look at the supplies of heating fuels going into winter, they're like 12% below the five-year average. So if demand is so bad, then why are supplies so tight? So that's why I think that this market cannot be complacent, especially what's going on. But you're right. If we get some really bad economic data, the U.S.-China trade talks fall apart, you can see oil prices really take a hit.
Well, we'll certainly be watching it and have you back. Thank you. Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at Price Group.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.